Mr. Edwards, Reel 10. Now, at the beginning of March, it says the 12th, but around about then, you went to Montague for a training period. Now, what do you remember of that?
Not a lot. I didn't like Montague much. It was a bit of a miserable place compared with Ypres. And the billets weren't as nice as Ypres. We did a bit of a training session, and all I remember is that we went along a lane and a tank in our squadron demolished the corner of a building which stuck out into a lane, and he was fined 15 shillings, which would be about half his week's pay at the time. The CO fined him 15 shillings for knocking down this house.
Was there anything new about, you know, about what the training methods?
I can't remember. We didn't do that much anyway. It was only a bit of a scheme. We only went on this one scheme that I can remember.
Now,
On the 24th of on the 24th of March, I think it was a Sunday morning, all the tank tracks had to come off while the fitters fitted new sprockets and new front sprockets on new idler sprockets. So we were all the tanks were lined up in the street with the tracks off, and those fitters were putting new sprockets on, and then we were having to put the tracks on. So and some of the local men were coming helping. Everybody was working on these tracks, and it was like an IVM industry. And while this was going on, an air armada flew over the top, planes, towing gliders, scores and scores of them, all on the way to the Rhine, because the Rhine crossing had taken part in that place in the night, and this was the 6th Airborne Division going over to have a go. So that was a very impressive Sunday morning.
And what about your own crossing?
Well, a few days later, we were loaded onto, 2 or 3 days later, we loaded onto transporters, and then we moved up in the night, and we crossed the Rhine Bridge the following morning.
What do you remember that? It was a pontoon bridge, wasn't
it? It was a pontoon bridge, yeah.
How did it take the weight of the tank?
I don't remember. We just went over and that was it. We'd been such an uncomfortable night on the transporter or in the night that it was nice to get back in the tank and get moving again. So we crossed over and we travelled some on the other side. We travelled some distance and then stopped for the night and started fighting the next morning.
So what's the first operations you remember in Germany?
Well, we started advancing the next morning, and there was some opposition in the village, and our troop was sent on a flanking movement over towards the left. There was a river there, but they were hoping we could cross the river somewhere to outflank the village.
Do you know the name of the village?
No, it was only a small place. Anyway, we couldn't get across the river because it was too deep and the banks were too steep. Anyway, at one point there was some farm buildings and there was a bridge. It was a wooden bridge, but it looked very strong, as if it was used for the farm. And it was over like a mill pond, actually. It was a mill pond with a bridge over. And the troop leader said to Sergeant G, who was the troop sergeant, to see if he could get his tank over this bridge. So he took it very gently onto the bridge. When he got all the tank on the bridge, the tank and the bridge all went collapsed into deep water, and there's only about 3 inches of the top of the tank showing. All the crew came up like drowned rats, and that was the end of them. So what happened to them I don't know, because we moved and they managed to sort out the village, and we got to the other side of the village, and the tank started bogging down, and one of our troop bogged down, and our tank tried to pull it out, and we got bogged down, so we were both bogged down. We had to wait for the ARV to come and tow us both out, and there was one or two other tanks.
Was this a thing about the Comet?
Yeah, well, it had rained so much in the winter that it was very soggy ground, and the Comets, they bogged down easier than the Shermans did anyway. Anyway, when we all got moving again, I remember in the afternoon, over to the left there was a village, and our troop was told to go and sort the village out. Well, we were only two tank, it was only a two tank troop by then, because there was one in the river and one had bogged down and was ready to be pulled out. So there was just the two tanks of us to go to sort this village out. Anyway, one tank went straight across the fields to the village with half a dozen infantrymen in the back. And our tank, without any infantry, went the long way around by road into the village. As we approached the village, there was a roadblock. It was a sort of a log palisade roadblock with the gap in the middle was filled by a cable drum, a massive cable drum. The gap in the middle was over 10 feet because the tank was 10 feet wide, so the cable drum was bigger than that. And it was full of rubble, filled with rubble, so it must have weighed umpteen tons. The commanders, by the way, before we went into action, they'd taken our Corporal Paddy Purcell off us and given us an officer, a younger officer, second lieutenant, 19-year-old, brand new, don't remember his name, a brand new officer, presumably to get some experience. So we'd lost Paddy and we got this brand new officer. Anyway, he told me to put an HE into this cable drum, which I did, but it just made a bit of a hole in it, and all some of this stuff spilled out of it, and it filled the room, filled the street with dust. The tank that had gone cross country got bogged down, so the half a dozen infantry on the back had to walk into the village. So they were walking in from one direction as we were coming in from the other. So when the dust had cleared in the street, one of these infantry popped round from behind the block and give us the aye aye. So we went up and drove up to the block, and the driver drove up to this cable drum, and this did such a bang. We bounced back off it. It must have weighed umpteen tons. Wonder it didn't knock our teeth out. Anyway, he backed off and then came up more slowly this time and gradually pushed it away, and we went through. We'd only just got through, and the tank stopped and wouldn't go. And what had happened? The tow rope had got jerked off with the bang, and it got wrapped round the bogies. So we were stuck there with this thing wrapped round the bogies. So we got out to try and free it while the infantry were checking the houses along the street. And while we're still trying to get this, we've got crowbars on and all sorts trying to get this rope out. It was in hell of a mess. Because we were held up, they sent a trooper tanks through, and this trooper tanks, four tanks came driving past, and they were all jeering at us about this tow rope, because it was a sort of well-known thing. You got your tow rope stuck so that you didn't have to advance against the enemy. Anyway, they were jeering at us about this tow rope. So they went ahead, and we eventually got this rope untangled, and we were just sat there in what was like a village square. And a lot of the villagers came out to have a look at us then, because they were very curious, I suppose. And there was a crowd of them there watching us. Old men, no young men, but old men, all women, and children.
How did you get on with them? Were they the first you'd seen?
Well, they were, yeah, first Germans I'd seen. But anyway, they were all keeping the distance, but then gradually crawling, getting a bit to have a look at us. And I was a bit bothered by this, because I thought if one of the wise guys got a hand grenade, they could just toss it in the hatchway. So, a chap came to speak to the commander, and he said he was a Polish DP. There were lots of Polish DPs, and he said, a friend of mine can give you lots of information about where the Germans are and about their movements and all this. So the commander said, well, go and fetch him, will you? And he sent our wireless operator with him as an escort. Go and fetch your mate, you see. So they went off, so we were sitting there without a wireless operator. Anyway, I didn't like where all this crowd were coming up, so I wriggled under the... I depressed the gun so that the back end came up, so I could wriggle under it. And I stood out on the operator's seat, so that I was way out of the turret, and I waved my revolver above my head at the crowd, and said, Achtung, Achtung! Gehen nach Hause! Bleiben Sie dort! Gehen Sie nach Hause und bleiben Sie dort! So they sort of backed away reluctantly and started to walk. Anyway, just at that moment, the retreating enemy fired a salvo of airbursts over the top of the village, I know, as though these all went off, they all ran like hell and disappeared, so they must have thought I was giving them warning of the danger. Anyway, they all disappeared and I was happy. We just rejoined the squadron after that, and I can't remember much about it apart from the fact that that night, the first night in Germany in action, we spent in a ploughed field guarding a track. Just our tank. There's supposed to be some infantry somewhere around, but I couldn't see them. So we spent all night on our own guard in this track. And I can't remember, in Germany, I can just remember certain days. Like I say, some days we were just following on others. I can remember.
Was it an increasing threat from Panzerfaust at the time?
Well, it was. That was the main threat, was Panzerfaust. So you're in danger of being bazooka'd all the time. You didn't worry about tanks much because you didn't come up against them. I mean, going into Germany, I thought, God, they'll fight like tigers, it'll be horrible. But anyway, it was just seemed to be the opposite. It was much more relaxed in Germany.
And was there anything you could do about Panzerfaust? Because some tanks fired along hedgerows and things like that, you know. Did you do, I mean...
Well, so the occasion didn't occur then. Not until later. Anyway, one day I can remember is the 1st of April we arrived at the Dortmund Thames Canal. The RE's had got a bridge over and we went over the Dortmund Thames Canal. And there was a bit of a bridgehead, but there wasn't much evidence of it. But our troop and another troop were spread out, forming one side of the bridgehead, and we sat there all day really. But the enemy air force was going nearly all day, and people were blazing away at it, and there were Bofors guns going and all sorts, and some of the planes were shot down. Actually, I didn't see much of it because I was sitting in my gunner seat, but our driver Spike, he was blazing away with our Bren gun all the time till he used all the ammunition up.
Were they effective air attacks or?
I've no idea.
They didn't come near you? I mean,
well, they weren't right near us, but the planes were flying over us, of course. I don't remember. All I know is that some planes were shot down, and some of our blokes claimed, I mean, shot them down. But being a gunner down in the bottom, I couldn't see a lot that was going on. So.
Well, now what about food in the tank? I mean, you've been going a fair while now. What sort would you expect to eat?
Well, we used to have these 14-man packs, which lasted a tank crew for 3 days, and they had tins of stuff, tins of hardtack biscuits, and tins of stew, and tins of cheese, and things like that.
This would be the compo food rations.
Compo rations, that's right, yeah.
And who would do the cooking?
Nobody in particular.
It wasn't the co-driver?
No. We didn't seem to get lots of chance to cook, actually, lots of days, because we were always on the move. It's only every now and then we got a chance to do a bit of cooking. But on our tank, Spike was the only one who knew anything about cooking, actually. So he tended to be the leader, but everybody had to go have a go at these things.
Was cooking just heating up the tins, really?
Yeah, generally speaking.
And what about brewing up tea? Because I know a lot of tanks made a big thing about brewing up if they got the moment to spare.
Well, we used to brew up as often as possible.
How did you do it quickly?
How? Oh, I have no idea. We used to just do it when we got the opportunity. One day I tried brewing up on the back of the tank while we were on the move, but it didn't work because we stopped for long periods, and I thought, well, during one of these long stops I could brew up, but when I got on the back of the tank to try and brew up, it didn't stop for very long then, so I had to pack it in. So it didn't work out.
And what's the next thing you remember? After crossing the Dortmund Thames,
after the Dortmund Thames
fighting
Canal.
On the Teutoburger Wald.
Oh yeah, well, we leaguered the night, and it was raining, and it was a miserable night. Anyway, the next morning, our two troops, that's eight tanks, had to sit on top of the ridge, and blaze away at the ridge, blaze away at the Teutoburger Ridge, while the infantry were attacking sort of the other end of it, and I know the third mum's had a third mum must have had a hard time there, but we didn't know about it at the time. At the end of the day, we just started moving. They left that to the somebody else, and we carried on moving away from there. The next thing I can remember is the River Weser. It's a few days later we were on the River Weser.
That's what do you remember about that? Crossing the Weser, or?
Well, no. We arrived at the River Weser one evening, or one afternoon, and just hung about while they were made plans to put a bridge across and get a bridge head and all that. And we stayed the night there. We leaguered and we slept in a barn actually. The next morning we were spread out along the river bank while the RAs were working on a bridge and of course over the other side was the 8th Rifle Brigade and 45 Commando holding the bridgehead. I remember it was drizzling and we were sitting there on the river bank, and the co-driver and I, we thought it was a bit cold and miserable, we'll light a fire, so we went on a search and we found lots and lots of wood to make a fire. We built this fire behind the tank and we got the ration box to sit on, and we sat on the ration box with this fire and we were very comfortable. And the rain stopped and it was quite nice. Anyway, nothing much happened, but in the afternoon the Luftwaffe came over and they had a go at the bridge, and they strafed the bridge and bombed it, and I believe that they wrecked the bridge and killed a lot of REs on the bridge. And a lot of these planes went past us at treetop height, and amongst the planes that were going over was a couple of Stukas, or a couple of old Stukas. One of them got shot down near us, and some Spitfires nipped out of a cloud and shot them down. One of them got shot down near us, and the pilot bailed out and he floated on his parachute right across us, landed on the other side of the river, got rid of his chute and started walking away towards the German positions. And I thought, oh, that's nice for him, we'll soon be back amongst friends. But anyway, a sergeant in the tank thought differently, and he fired a machine gun at him and in his direction, and he signalled for him to come back, and the poor bloke had to come back. On the other side of the river was a rowing boat tied to a stump. He had to row himself over to be captured, which was a bit hard lines, I thought. Anyway, as soon as he landed, two of the blokes went and grabbed him. One pinched his leather jacket and the other pinched his watch, and they marched him over towards our tank. So, and he was shivering, the pilot was shivering, so I sat him down near our fire and I wrapped a blanket, got a spare blanket, wrapped it around his neck, around his shoulders, and had a few words with him and asked him how old was he? He said, I was 25, and I said, what's your hometown? And he said, Breslau. And just that day, we'd heard that the Russians had advanced into Breslau, so I told him the Russians were in Breslau, and that's not cheered him, won't have cheered him up very much. Anyway, then a scout car arrived with an officer, which I think was Steele Brownlee, because in his memoirs, Steele Brownlee said he went to pick up a parachutist, a chap who'd come down in his parachute, and we handed him over to this scout car and he took him away for interrogation. And that was the last I remember of the River Weser, except that we did
cross. You could speak German, couldn't you?
School German, yeah. And being in the Home Guard and thinking that there was a war against the Germans, I'd kept it up a bit after school just to improve it, but I've lost it all now. But at the time, I could speak a fair bit of German.
And did you try and learn more while you were there?
I don't think so, no. No, I just wondered what I knew.
What's the next thing you remember?
So we crossed elsewhere. We didn't cross at our bridge because it got destroyed. We crossed at somebody else's bridge, which I think was the 6th Airborne Bridge. The next after that was a place called Lockholm, which is just the other side of the Weser, which was where our Major Laram got killed.
Now, he'd taken over from Gilmore, who was now second in command.
He was second.
What was Laram like?
I didn't know him. I didn't see much of him.
Do you know how he was killed?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you there?
I didn't see it, but we were in position somewhere in Lockham. So there was lots of anti-tank guns in Lockham, and Lockham area, and they were being sorted out. Well, all I remember is I heard on the radio, on the wireless, a tank commander say that, actually, Laram had been back with his scout car to a conference, and he'd come back up to the squadron, and he'd overshot. And a tank commander said, "That scout car which has just passed me, stop, stop. That scout car which has just passed me, stop, come back, there's a gun," so and so. Anyway, it was too late because the gun got him, and it was destroyed, the scout car, and Major Laram and his scout car driver were both killed. So, Captain Ride took over as squadron leader.
What was he like?
I don't know, didn't know.
What's the next thing you remember?
The next thing was a place called approaching Swarmstead, which was, I think, was the 10th. I put it down here as the 10th of, yeah, the 10th of Swarms, 10th of April, Swarmstead. We moved out to Leaguer in the morning and moved up the road and got alongside where the infantry were in position. And we parked near the edge of a wood, and we had a bit of breakfast. And while we were there, an infantry lieutenant and a sergeant came walking around searching the area, and they said, "Have you seen any of our blokes?" And we said, "No." They said, "Oh, we'd had three-man listening post near the edge of this wood, and they disappeared in the night, so they must have been taken prisoner." So, anyway, after breakfast, we were given orders what to do, and we advanced, start with up a road, and second lieutenant told me to put some HE into a wood we could see in front, which we did. But then we turned left off the road and advanced cross-country. And as we were advancing, we were the right-hand tank of the right-hand troop of the squadron. And we were advancing across this field at a slanting towards the right-hand edge. And there was no orders from the lieutenant, so I didn't like this edge, so I started to spray the base of it with a beezer. And Spike, the driver, who was having a spell in the co-driver's seat, he joined in with his beezer, so between us we gave the hedge a good dose of lead all the way along. Then we went through the hedge, stopped on the other side, and the second lieutenant told me to beezer the hedge in front, and the hedge in front of that. Now, unknown to me, there'd been a bazooka party, half a dozen enemy hiding behind the hedge with the bazookas, and they'd all been wiped out with our machine gun fire, which was fortunate for us and not fortunate for them. Anyway, we did some more shooting at the edges in front, just in case, and he had me firing HE at something in the about 800 yards away, which we couldn't tell if it was a building or a vehicle, but it went up in smoke, in a big column of black smoke. Did a lot more firing, and then they gave it a rest. And Spike had opened his hatch and had to look round, and he'd seen these dead jerrys there. And he said, came on to the commander, "Hey, commander," he said, "some of these jerrys, some of them are not properly dead, and they've got bazookas there. How about hand grenades?" The lieutenant didn't fancy hand grenade in them, so no answer from him. So Spike said, "Hey, Tell him, Jack." So I tapped him and tapped his leg and repeated the message anyway. There's still no response from this lieutenant. So next thing I heard was bump, 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 bump. Spike was out with his Luger, finishing off the ones who weren't quite dead. Not quite the Geneva Convention, but he was frightened of them coming to life with a bazooka. Then while we were waiting, Captain Ryder, the squadron leader, arrived in his tank nearby, with an infantry carrier, and the infantry officer got out of the carrier and was crouching on the back of his tank, conferring with Captain Ride, when he got shot in the shoulder. So he got back in his, they helped him back in his carrier, and they carried him away in his carrier. And Captain Ride was, had his head out watching them go, and he got shot in the face. So he turned around and he disappeared. So we were there still an hour on again. So the lieutenant says, well, start the bees up again, you see. So we were blazing over the bees at everything, every edge and every field we could see. And after a bit, we'd fired 19 belts. I mean, I hadn't counted them, but I could tell we got 19 by what we got left. We'd fired 19 by what we got left. Fired 19 belts, and the gun must have been red hot. And we had a, on front of the gun mantlet was a waterproof canvas cover, and it had caught fire. I didn't know what it was, but I found myself, I was choking and suffocating in this dense white smoke inside the turret. And I said, hey, Terry, what's going on? Anyway, the operator got up with the fire extinguisher, the only little Pyrex things, squirting at this thing, and I had to keep dodging up and down because the Captain Ryder got sniped. He thought he might do as well anyway, so he was dodging up and down, squirting the fire extinguisher on this, and he used the, both fire extinguishers which we got in the tank, and it was still smouldering. Anyway, we had some empty shell cases, so I passed one round, myself and the other two in the turret. We all peed in the shell case, and the operator tipped that on, and that sort of finished off the smouldering.
What was smouldering exactly, sorry?
This waterproof canvas cover on the front was smouldering and filling the tank with smoke. So that put out the fire, and we were all right after that. Anyway, then we were told to advance, and the squadron advanced, and we with them. But we'd only advanced, just started advancing, and the Germans all started jumping out of the slit trenches. So we had infantry behind us, so we just stopped and let the infantry go for to sort these people out, and then we advanced up towards Swampstead Village, which was about a good half mile away, I suppose. And we arrived at the village. In our case, we just parked in a field on the edge of the village, and the 45 commando were coming through, and we watched them come past us because they were going up to the River Halle, which was just ahead, and they had to force a crossing of the River Halle just ahead of us. So we were there the rest of the day at Swampstead, and the next day